Anonymous users, every marketer's worst nightmare or just an unsolved Agatha Christie mystery? We're in a world where personalization is king, but with increasing privacy regulations and third-party data fading fast, how do brands connect the dots without overstepping boundaries? In this episode of Couch Confidentials, number 13, by the way, I sit down with Tommy Sowerby from Relay 42, who's been tackling this challenge head-on. His recent article on the anonymous problem for marketers got me thinking, are we too focused on identity, or are we just approaching it the wrong way? Let's get into it. Hey, Tommy, thanks for joining. This is Couch Confidentials number 13. And I've been looking forward to this little chat with you after reading your article, The Anonymous Problem for Marketers on LinkedIn. And it really got me thinking about the missed opportunities we're seeing with anonymous users. And I covered this previously with Otoscope's solution together with Matthias Betag. And I just can't seem to forget about it. But before we dive in, could you do like a quick introduction to the viewers?
Yeah, hi. I'm Tom Sowerby, probably a veteran of the SaaS marketing space. I've worked at CDPs like Telium, working at Relay 42, which is a optimization platform around acquisition. So really keen to explore how we can try and turn anonymous visitors into happy, loyal customers, because I think that's a big area of growth. If you think about it, I think majority of sites have around 85 to 95% on them are anonymous, and people are spending hundreds of thousands, if not millions of pounds, trying to optimize for the, you know, not to one or two, maybe 10% of people that they do know. But actually, if you can turn the needle a little bit on the anonymous ones, I think there's huge amounts of revenue companies are missing. So it's quite an interesting topic, and there's a lot of people coming at it from quite a few different angles.
Yeah, oh, definitely. And I mean, I think even in your article, you describe anonymous users as both a challenge and an opportunity. From your kind of your introduction, I hear that marketers are probably too focused on identifying users. Do we need to kind of change our view? And has there been any research that corroborates the potential value of anonymous users?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? I mean, it's really right all the way back, I think, to sort of CDPs and customer data platforms. I kind of feel like the word customer is kind of an unhelpful tool, unhelpful word in acronym, because there's not as much customer data, and the vast majority of the data going through platforms is anonymous. I think there's also another partly around there's not as huge amounts of innovation in the tech space as there used to be. If you think about the sort of VC money's kind of drying up, or not as much out as there was,
yeah.
I think it's not like there's lots of bright, shiny new tools that people have got to just shine on their website or to apply and get instant returns from. So actually, I think it's almost like this big elephant's been in the room for a long time that no one's really tackled with, because there's always been another way of trying to focus and try and drive better conversions from known customers. I still think known customers is a big part of your business, because you know the most about them and you can tailor messaging towards them.
Oh, absolutely.
So I think that'll always be a fundamental part of it. But the amount of competition there is around customers in terms of sort of as a vendor, it is huge. And actually, you have to turn the dial a lot less on a much bigger segment. If one segment's 10% and one bigger and segment's 90%, you only have to turn it a little bit in the 90 to get a decent return.
Yeah.
So I think that's where it's pretty basic, but I think that's why. And there's quite a lot of platforms out there that say the word anonymous, or they have an anonymous button. But actually, what I'm realizing, so I should get drunk water. What you soon realize is that the kind of devil's in the detail a little bit. I mean, in terms of what does anonymous mean? Obviously, you talked to me a little bit earlier about sort of grayness of there's not logged, there's a known customer not logged in, there's people with their cookies disabled, there's
yeah.
All manner of these kind of different avenues of it. But ultimately, in terms of the research we've had some really good numbers. Off the top of my head, I should have written them down for you, but you can go onto our website and have a look at them. But essentially, there's a sort of relative journey I think you can travel from being an anonymous user on a website to being able to personalize that experience for them. Otoscope do a good job of that. I mean, speaking to those guys, there's also the ability to create profiles on people that can persist over a period of time, enabling you to drive a personalization when they come back. And then obviously you can retarget as well anonymously through different platforms as well, through paid media channels.
Yeah.
That's a kind of your sort of anonymous journey. But I think there's also interesting tools out there as well. Wunderkind is another one.
Yeah.
Profile enrichment. And there was another one. I was talking to some guys last week and they mentioned a tag management solution that I completely, well, it's a little bit more than tag management solution. Gentis, GENTIS.com. I believe they're an Austrian company, but they've also, they're focusing their go-to-market around privacy and very much focused on the German market with the, with higher security. I believe there's also an analytics company called Fathom Analytics, also working without cookies. So I do seem to, I don't want to call it a trend, but there's definitely people building out companies with these types of solutions. It definitely goes to prove that there is a demand for this. Are you seeing that in specific markets or countries?
Well, I think Germany is obviously going to be the number one place
that
information innovation comes from, because privacy is such a big part of it. And no surprise that they're leading the charge in it. I think there's actually a whole element of, we were for a long time geared up around a sort of cookieless world or cookieless world program, something we offered, where we were looking at how you could be able to advertise retargeting using the Google privacy sandbox and APIs. Still kind of wait, as I said to you earlier, I had a message the other day on my Chrome that asked me about my privacy.
You mentioned that.
I wanted to have more targeted ads, and I wasn't sure if that was a precursor to the big, do you want third-party cookies removed? But it's only going one way, right? I mean, that's the thing. It's only more and more.
That's a different topic, but I don't want to delve into the world of politics, because I feel that in the US, for instance, regulations are going to be loosened. There's going to be a little bit more room for these tech giants to gather more data on their users, which is, of course, brings up a whole different discussion.
Yeah.
How do people outside of that region, how should they be concerned about the safety of their data? And I've had talks with people saying, what happens if there's going to, I even saw it on my LinkedIn feed, someone saying, well, what happens if a law gets enforced within Europe saying, hey, European companies are only allowed to work with European SaaS solutions? That's going to make the playing field very diverse.
Well, funny enough, I've actually had some meetings recently with a Dutch company, believe it or not, who one of their main concerns was data going into one of the huge American companies.
Yeah.
And actually wanting to ring fence their data within Europe. So it may well be that. I mean, obviously, I guess the deregulation from Trump and the rest of these sort of those guys probably will. I mean, I hadn't actually thought of that, to be honest with you. I'm very much focused on the European market, but you're right. I mean, ultimately, if they make data more freely available, then that is going to be quite a challenge. I mean, Amazon obviously allow you to store your data within Europe anyway. So I guess it will depend. That's your own data. Yeah. I'm guessing using suppliers that can't ring fence their data within Europe will be a big problem.
Yeah.
But I know there's a whole network of privacy solutions out there that jumped up. Actually, a guy used to work with us, Dan Hesmanho, who's from Monte. He's in a business called PAPI, which is basically looking PAAPI. I think it's privacy, doing the sandbox stuff for Google, but a sort of wider network of companies that are looking to offer privacy solutions. I guess the issue with a lot of that stuff, though, is if people are doing a cookie-less analytics and things like that, I'm guessing that's all based on sort of sampling data of sorts, right? Because how else?
I think it's the same way.
You need an X number of opt-in people to a certain percentage to be able to extrapolate behavior. I think that's the value.
Yeah. Well, I even saw in Google Analytics, somebody, again, LinkedIn, I was spending too much time on LinkedIn. I need to find a new platform or spend more time with the family. But I also saw that Google had an announcement. Somebody showed this little banner above GA4 saying that due to Google consent mode, and they were using sampling to enrich the data that's potentially missed because of Google consent mode, or was it just because of the Yeah, well, they don't know how much traffic you're missing if people have ad blockers, but they were filling up that gap, because I've been saying this for years. When I did analytics work, I said, yeah, people who block your data, don't worry about it. You need to look at the trends. You need to look at the percentages. So if the trends, change over time, that's if 20-30% of the people use ad blockers, sure, you're going to miss some data, but it's the trends that you need to keep an eye on, especially around your the conversion rates and the funnel drop-offs, et cetera. So I guess with anonymous analytics solutions, that's a good question, because with GA4 there, you can sync it with Google Ads. I think if we look at something like Fathom, and I'd love to talk to someone from Fathom about this, so if you're listening, but my perception is that they don't share this data. It's all for you. There is no user ID tied into it. A good question is, does it persist over multiple sessions, or is each session new? And indeed, that's another good question when it comes down to analytics, when conversion rate, conversion rate is never going to be 100% in every session of the people who do buy, because they don't have any previous sessions. So it's going to be interesting to see what that looks like in the reports. But yeah,
I think the big one I see a lot, in that area is really about attribution, because a lot of the reason people start talking to me about anonymous isn't just, and we talk a lot about anonymous paid media optimization and being able to create segments of users that show have certain behaviors that you want to retarget through social media platforms. Yeah. And obviously you can do that through a Facebook where you can basically give them all your data, but lots of companies don't want to give Facebook or Google all of their data. They don't want them to see everything that they're doing and then choose who to retarget. They want to have a ring-fenced audience that they create, and then they can push those audiences.
Yeah, security is riddled with holes like the Titanic. Seriously, it's...
Well, and also, they're betting against you. You suddenly show people on your site that are showing some kind of interest, and you give them access to your first-party data, then suddenly that person's bidding is different elsewhere on the site, or they suddenly become someone of high value elsewhere, and that's indicated in those platforms. And it's hard to believe that there's not something going on like that, or there's a perception of that. But actually, trying to understand attribution is a really key part of this as well. I think that's probably the bigger. I mean, I think a couple of Phosphor I've seen who do something in this space, trying to bring out some mixed media modeling. But actually trying to understand without that cookie piece around it, how do you even understand where to spend your money or what's working as well? And I think that's a really big challenge. And I think that's probably at the heart of that piece.
I mean, thinking about it then, what would be, it just came to my mind, how would you track the success of anonymous users on your website if you're not able to properly track it? Would that just bring to life the anonymous to known KPI?
Well, I think as soon as you can do. So, I mean, ultimately, I guess it's probably more like device, right, rather than user, I think, or even browser. Obviously, yeah. For us, for example, there's your ID management solutions out there. We have one where you'll land on a page, and ultimately, an ID will be created. That's called hashtag 1234, and then around that will be a series of IDs, and then from that ID, it's basically like a key ring. And then then you can attach every bit of information that is to
every bit of ID that from other platforms that you can link to it. Yeah,
exactly. And normally you try and get an email address, and once you've got the email address, then you can fire out to an email at different times of day, and then the different devices come back, and suddenly you've got the hook. But before you get to that stage, you've still got hashtag 1234, and hashtag 1234 is going to have certain behaviors. And if you run a genuine real time capability as well, and I mean sub 200 milliseconds. You'll be able to see people on the fly exhibiting certain behaviors that maybe will allow you to personalize what they want to do. So, for example, and sometimes that even trumps, even on a known customer journey, that will trump known behaviors. For example, you might as well. But it's a combination of the ID management and that real-time activation. So you can see that someone is navigating into certain areas and then start to personalize based on that. And I'm thinking, understanding on a flight, for example, the difference between a business traveler and someone traveling with their family, that will start to be fairly indicative quite quickly based on what they're doing. And then obviously, if you understand that from the last visit and when they come back again, if you've got that ID, then you can start to change the language.
Oh, no, absolutely. But interesting question, though, because two questions that I have is then, if you do know who they are when they come back, even though they are anonymous in terms of PII, are they anonymous because you have an ID? 50 for them across multiple sessions? And that's one question. And the other one that came up as you were talking is, does real time become more important when dealing with anonymous users as compared to known users? My personal opinion is with the latter is yes, because if you known users, you have the luxury, if you do it well, to communicate with them through first-party communications, push notifications, email, in-app messaging, etc. So, yeah, I'm just trying to think there. Is real-time does become more critical with anonymous?
Yeah, I think it is. And if you look at the sort of innovation in the CDP market, I think you can start to see that. There's obviously the composable piece came along, build out the warehouse, zero copy, although I'm sure we can dig into that in a whole other topic as to how much zero copy there actually exists. But ultimately,
I see people rolling their eyes already. Here we go again.
Ultimately, you know, the problem with that is you're only activating the data that's in the data warehouse. And typically data warehouses do not work in real time fashion because it's too expensive to run them at that speed, right? So they tend to just have customer data within them. And quite an interesting innovation with Telium that I saw with their Snowpipe and Snowflake integration was essentially the customer data flow straight into the data warehouse can be activated from there. And I guess you can either that back into Telium or ETL layer or whatever you're using.
You can push it back into Audience Stream, for instance.
Exactly that. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But actually,
that's impressive.
Yeah. And even if you might have other, they might have built out other, like, you know, it would like to think these things all join together, but typically organizations have lots of different people everywhere doing different things. So there's probably other activation layers outside of, say, a Snowflake, but actually you could run that background.
Yep.
But then they're also streaming the real-time data, the anonymous data, and providing use cases in Telium outside of that. And then that allows them to kind of almost turn a unknown user into a known user and then push that into the data warehouse to be...
Oh, that's interesting.
I mean, I'm sure it's not cheap.
No. But if you split the streams, you keep the anonymous user data within the Telium platform to begin with. You don't even send it to the data warehouse because, again, to what point, what degree would you need it?
Well, the thing is, I mean, I don't work at Telium anymore. I mean, they left there a long time ago. But I would have thought, when I saw that integration, my thought was, well, if you want AI to run across all your data, you probably don't want your customer data in a data warehouse, in a CDP anymore, because it's only just a narrow prism of your data. Whereas if you could dump the whole lot into the data warehouse, and then that has all the other data you don't want to share. And often there's proprietary machine learning and...
Oh, absolutely. For further enrichment, yeah.
Yeah, that they then can actually run their own models on, and then they can determine what to do. And then, funny enough, I mean, I'm blowing my own trumpet here, but a few years ago, even 5 years ago, I did something similar for a gaming company where we brought the data into GCP, and they used GCP to run various, I mean, gaming and gambling sites are notorious for their proprietary data algorithms. And then they ran execution strategies from there and then piped it back into Telium, and Telium sort of executed from that. So, I mean, that's probably a precursor to it. I think I got in a bit of trouble. I think I renamed Audience Stream back then to a profile stream.
That was you.
A little bit of rap on the knuckles. But ultimately, I think that sort of model kind of makes sense, right? Where you would try and have sort of real-time use cases in one platform, and that would save the costs as well.
Yeah. Well, I know the headaches that anonymous users give these CDP platforms. Segment's one of those models where if you charge by MTU, you know, monthly tracked users, and you do a huge campaign attracting, you know, just as much data as you would usually do in a year, you've blown through your entire limit of, you know, allowable tracked users. So it makes it a little bit difficult in that. Like we said at the start, that the easiest way to convince people to purchase, so the easiest way to value in some sort of way, is through known users. And anonymous users is a higher risk because you don't know what the right way is to approach them. So wasting all your MTUs on anonymous users is quite a risk.
Yeah, I think for a long time you could just optimize on those. No, I mean, we used to sort of refer to them as campaign CDPs. Because I actually think there's probably only a handful of CDPs that are even really, or even any platforms that are genuinely real time. And also the other part to probably place in this as well is I think some of the pay media stuff you need to do in terms of dropping pixels, in terms of anonymous retargeting, you probably need browser capability like Segment or a Relay 42 or Telium or Segment, one of those guys.
Yeah.
Because you need that ability to close that off. But yeah, no, it's quite a tricky, I think lots of companies are struggling with that. And actually, for example, it's why at Relay 42, we focused on the acquisition bit, because ultimately lots of people have ways to market to customers. I mean, you often see Braze plus Snowflake. I see that out there quite a lot. You can have a high touch into a Snowflake, all these kind of different models, but they're all just marketing. There's very few people out there that are trying to focus and solve that issue around turning unknown prospects into customers, and then customers into loyal customers. And that's what was interesting about Otoscope as well, because they obviously seen a similar pattern. That's a slightly different way of doing it for us, and actually somebody that we could even look to partner with, because they have we've already done their piece, but that's another interesting approach where you kind of use an algorithm.
When you mentioned the company in the Netherlands, that's just one. Are you seeing like more interest? The ones that I'm seeing it from is always banking. For some reason, banking, be it the regulations that they fall under, but they're just, you know, they're afraid of that 4% fine. To that extent, but are you seeing a kind of a switching trend? I remember in the replacement survey that I did see earlier this year is that on premise, for instance, is doubled back to the rate, you know, from 4 to 8%. It's still nothing significant.
Yeah, but yeah.
It did double back to the rate of about 5 years ago. So that does to me indicate that privacy security around customer data is definitely on the rise, and anonymous users being able to deploy these kind of technologies to also safeguard the privacy of your users, I see that as an extension. And the question I'm kind of, are you seeing this development grow within the market?
Yeah, funny enough, I actually had I spoke to a company the other day that I again another gambling business, which is
gambling.
Yeah, well, gambling—it's all a bit of a
gray area. As saying these days,
but they were very adamant about wanting a on-premise solution around. But they wanted a pay media optimization tool, right? Because obviously they spend tons of money trying to get people to lay that first, unbail deposit for the spins or whatever it is. But that was interesting because you're right. Normally it's the banks who do that, but it was actually a pretty notable gaming organization. So. That I think you're definitely right. I mean, I can remember even the whole big drive is to try and even get JavaScript off the page because I just wanted to make sure that no one had any way of identifying people. But I do think it's an interesting one for the banking companies, because you'll have to have something on the page or browser related in order to actually activate to try and convert anonymous, right? Because
that's the end goal. I mean, anonymous is great. And I've seen these approaches attempted with these, of course, pop-ups, like we're back in 2005. We'll give you 10% discount on your first purchase if you just give us your email address. That barrier just to kind of drag people into their domain.
Sorry,
that's funny.
But what?
No, so that's so in some situations, you're seeing these pop-ups like you're being dragged back into 2005, But this time they're saying, hey, we'll give you 10% discount to kind of draw you across that imaginary line, but into the world of first party. And I think you're right in that companies should set goals around converting anonymous users into known users. If, of course, the entire product model or the offering behind it is of enough value to actually give the user something that they want.
Yeah, no, I've seen that. And I even seen that backed up now with the phone number. You get like even a WhatsApp. I
think really?
Yeah, I've had, obviously, I think Temu started with that. I don't know if you had Temu or been on that one, but that's a strange model. I soon realized it's probably just stealing all my data. So I got rid of that one. But that's.
Oh, Temu. Yeah, no, the guys over at the MarTech Weekly had an interesting article around that, how they've actually been applying all these growth techniques to the extreme within their apps. But you mentioned now that instead of giving an email, you can also reach out to them.
Yeah, they're trying to get both, right? And I actually played along with it because I thought it was quite, but it's very funny how a lot of the mechanism, the gamification stuff is very similar to games, other sort of handheld mobile games.
Mm-hmm.
I think I remember I was playing eight ball pool the other day on my phone.
Oh, I did it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My son, and I realized it was just the trick shop thing. They had a there's a bit at the beginning, like a lucky shot thing that you can do at the beginning. The team who try and get you to do, and they constantly retarget me through Facebook as well. And they must just make so much money that anyone who's ever bought anything from them, which is on an always on campaign. But they tried. I think I did put my phone number on that one once, because the first time I did it, they offer you some kind of crazy reward, but actually you soon realize it's not quite what it, as it seems. I like trying these things out, you know, full well going into them that the likelihood is that it is not what it seems, or it'll be points, or it'll be something else. But
yeah.
But just play the mechanics through the marketing stream to see what works and gets you through the funnel. And that was the first one I saw, the one in the mobile number. And now I've noticed that happens quite a lot but I've noticed on quite a few sites. I guess because once you get the mobile phone and then you've got the email address, then you've got someone completely cross-device. So yeah, that's a real first-party data grab. But I've always felt it just needs to be a value exchange, right? That's
exactly, that was my next point. I mean, what's in it for the users? And with Temo, from what I've been hearing, I've never tried it out myself, is, you know, they're just flinging discounts at you just to make sure to get you to convert, which, all right, I can understand. Discounts are great. When I go to a website and I see a 10% discount and I'm 80, 90% sure that I'll buy something, I'll enter my email address just to get that discount code. But yeah, I think Temo is a whole different story, and it does come down to, are you actually building trust, or is there a point where you're eroding trust? And I mean, if you look at the anonymous users, when I did some work for a crypto website, before I even started that, they say, all right, don't be shocked when you look at the data, but everyone's pretty much anonymous. Everyone deletes their cookie almost every day or every hour, because these are, I don't want to call them paranoid, but they were really nitpicky about their privacy. And it resulted in them using browsers and technologies and preferences within the security settings of the tools that they're using to remain as anonymous as possible. And sure, Temo, with quite an aggressive approach to get all this information, look, if it works for them, it works. If it harms the trust, you've already removed the app. So I'm kind of sensing that it was a little bit too much, and you wanted to rid yourself. I mean, it's a fine balance sometimes.
Yeah. Again, when you start to look at the origins of the company, you kind of look at TikTok and you start to think, well, these people are just, why are they so data hungry? And I started to work it out. And then I realized that actually, even from a basic standpoint, a couple of times I'd used Temu, which, by the way, were for grip socks for my kids' football.
Yeah.
I thought that was so cheap. But they must have spent more money on me chasing me than I'd ever spent with them. And at that point, I realized, well, this isn't right. It's just something here doesn't quite add up, because, and I think you erode that trust. And also, I guess the other side around that, and the flip of the anonymous piece as well, is not looking too creepy as well, right? In terms of personalization, in that realizing, I mean, it's sometimes had that feeling around, you know, retargeting people who have just explicitly tried to be anonymous, and then they get retargeted on through like Facebook, right? Because you're able to drop a pixel and then see when they come back and that kind of thing. So there's still people go, hold on, how on earth have they known that about me? I thought I turned all that type of stuff off. So that can be difficult, I think, as well.
And Facebook's one of the worst ones, because I mean, my daughter's on Instagram. She posts some great photos. My wife's on Instagram, so I thought I'd join as well. Now, my whole feed is filled with the dodo. I love the dodo. All about kind of good work around animals. And ever since I've been liking those, all I see is these kind of sad and positive stories around dogs. And but it's what I'm amazed about is just the accuracy of their advertising. And look, I'm not anonymous there. I've registered an account. They know who I am. They've inferred my interests based on, you know, what I click on and what I view, kind of in terms of videos. But that's what creeps me out. And it's one of the main reasons why I would want to quit, is that even if I don't have the app open, that's my perception at the moment, I would have discussed the topic with my family. Yeah. And you go back into the app and boom, there's ads for it. I'm like, how? I didn't even have the app open. I don't even have the permission for running in the background.
Yeah, I did on a lot of mine was I just turned the microphone off. That's how I, and I, I thought the microphone was what was doing it. I think so. But then I realized they were all at it. And it's frustrating at times because then I go to actually need a microphone to use for one of these things. Yeah. I have to go back into the app and do it. I don't think anybody likes the idea of there being listened to more than anything else. But, yeah.
Who was that? Siri had the same problem, or was it Google? I think it was Siri that they uncovered that there were people actually listening in to the conversations to try to determine what the topic is that, you know, the question that was being asked.
Yeah, I think that's it. And we only have to see how amazing the language processing is these days. I got the Gemini app with the Google AI tool but it's literally like having a conversation now. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I'm not sure it's unbelievably good or unbelievably worrying. I'm not sure. you can ask really specific questions around it.
Well, they have the UK. There's this granny in the UK that's AI generated that answers calls from scammers and keeps them talking. It was in the news in the Netherlands, but yeah, you haven't heard about this?
I actually seen a guy on TV once who talked about doing it and changed his phone number so that it was like a high value number back the other way. And he'd keep him going for so long and then get him to ring him back. And it was like £6 an hour and then he would make money out of it. That was quite, I'm putting on another level.
I need to write that one down. Hold on. No. Just kidding.
I think the same interesting about this anonymous piece as well, about the personalization bit, is what I've noticed is a lot of platforms have, they'll say, they'll have like an anonymous button that you tick. Oh, yeah, I'm going to do. And ultimately, it can often just be recommending the bestseller in a category, or it can be just recommending the basic stuff. Or so people feel like they've got this thing covered. But in reality, are they actually doing anything? What's the devil in the detail? I've saw that again with Insider recently. I was trying to work out how that works. It talked about having a persistent cookie, but then other people say it's 7 days. So there's a lot of FUD and sort of general information about that, about how these things are actually working. There's not too many, particularly what we call like the campaign sort of CDPs. And by that, I mean, you kind of start with an email. I mean, it's really interesting. I just think when you look at the demos of various platforms, is when all those kind of platforms start with an email campaign. You watch them, you know, like a Braze or those kind of guys, brilliant what they do. But they'll have like, you start off, and there's other tools out there, I think Mobilink and people like that, trying to get email addresses. And you fire out your email to your known base, try and build up your base, and then you try and orchestrate around it. But actually, I always think like the first thing I'd want to see is someone landing on a page and it being known or unknown. And then what are you going to do then? What's the strategy? Because I think when people finally nail that as a journey, the two journeys, right? People come on my site, they go this avenue for unknown, and we have these various tools. And this is what those journeys look like. They might be smaller. They might be.
Well, just the level of control. I was talking to Brian Clifton. About this, he has this app called Verified Data. He used to be the top guy at Google Analytics Europe back in 2005 when they started in Europe. A very knowledgeable guy, and when I was talking to him, we kind of thought of the concept, and he said he has seen a few examples of this before. Where, look, you come into a website, and I agree. You know, do you want to be tracked or not tracked? You need to ask a basic question, but the level of transparency that you're getting from these websites that you're going to is just minimal. People just need to come out and say, hey, because let's be honest, the amount of advertising websites are pretty much the same. You've got your Criteos, TikTok, Snapchat, you've got your Reddit, Facebook, Google. People know these logos, tell a story around them, saying, hey, if you opt for this one, we'll be sharing your data with these platforms, or, you know, turn these off. It might be intensive to get the selection right, but at the moment, people are, you know, you hear all these marketers saying, yeah, people are using too many ad blockers. We can't track what they're doing. And I remember Stefan Hamel in a podcast saying he was at a conference in Europe, and this was a topic of discussion. And he asked, all right, full of marketeers, how many of you are using ad blockers? And 70% raised their hand. It's just a fact of nature that people want to secure their privacy. And what I want to get to is that it's just, technically, there should be a way where we can find that middle ground. People should be able to decide where their data goes to. And I think the maturity level of a lot of people these days is high enough to give them the option saying, hey, do you want to go to advertising like Facebook and Meta and all these other platforms, or don't you have a preference center? Why doesn't anybody have a strong preference center where you can just literally tailor your decision of where your data is being sent to?
Well, I always have
which parameters of your data can be shared where?
Yeah, I actually had an idea a few years ago might be a good idea now, actually, the way it's going. Be careful what I say about this, because I actually thought this out quite extensively with somebody.
If it's not IP yet, you might want to, might need to break the call here.
Yeah, but ultimately it was a way of thinking, well, actually, how could you just pay people to give you their data for advertising? So essentially you would, essentially you would volunteer your information in a way that advertising companies could bowl. So a bit like a third party data, but voluntary third party data, where, and each time you were kind of maybe advertised to, you get like a micro amount of money for volunteering your data. Obviously you need big scale for it, but I feel like it's the reward part back for it, because when you give your data to somebody and they say, oh, we're going to give you more tailored ads, well, no, you're not. You're going to take my data and you're going to charge other companies huge amounts of money for me at scale. It's not me, yeah. It's everybody at scale. And then you make billions of pounds out of it. So I think there needs to be some kind of kickback back to users that would enable them to want to give it up.
I'll turn that around. Instead of making money on it, how would you feel about governments creating and offering a platform in which citizens can upload their personal data and from there control, you know, who you're going to share your data with? Instead of, so you get rid of all the cookie banners everywhere, and these companies can get access to the central platform that's regulated by the government and gain access on who you are. I'm just thinking out loud here.
Yeah, no,
there's no blueprint here, but
yeah,
being able to have full control over which data you share. I mean, even with other government agencies, you can share your data. I mean, I know for healthcare, for instance, I need to give permission for my doctor to, sorry, for my, where I get my medicine, I don't know the English word for it, that they are able to, or even between two doctors, I need to give permission if they're allowed to see my profile. Why don't we do that on a government level for e-commerce then?
Yeah, well, we're in the UK, of course, I think patient knows best, I think it's called.
It's the
thing that we have over here with sort of permissions and allowances. I think there's always going to be an assumption, especially these days, that anything the government does is against you. You're going to have the Tim Ford Hat Brigade on you thinking this.
And there's nobody more critical of the government than the British people at the moment, right?
I mean, I think governments all around the world are struggling for that kind of.
Oh, that's true. Yeah,
but it's a weird way to say that, because in terms of institutions, a lot of the power has been eroded by government's powers have been eroded by financial institutions and the growth of these kind of organizations that hold the data. So you're right. Yeah. Historically, data was held by governments on people, and now it's this data is probably held by, but much more by these.
By big tech. But here's an interesting story, though. I was talking to some guys from Australia. They're developing a customer engagement platform. They have roots in India, but apparently in India there's this system called the ONDC, the Open Network Digital Commerce Platform, which is a government setup platform that democratizes the marketplaces industry. So from what I've been told, it's one of the main reasons why Amazon can't get a foothold there, is that it's an open network with their own messaging protocols to connect buyers with sellers. So you have companies that build the apps for both, so that if you're a buyer, you're in the market for a new phone, you can put out a request, you can search, you can show that you have interest, and people can come back to you with specific offers. But what I've been seeing now is that so the people that control that middleware between the buyers and the sellers, they have access to this customer data. But this interesting case is with one of the examples, this huge company, I can't name the name, they have access to everyone on that ONDC who has viewed their products or has at least interacted products at least once through this customer engagement platform. They act as a data clean room, whatever you want to call it. The supplier of these products cannot see the individual information of these users, but they can communicate on first-party channels. So they can do WhatsApp messaging with them, even put out campaigns through WhatsApp and email. So for this one company, because of that ONDC, they have access to 350 million people through a type, but they don't have access to that data. And I find that so interesting because the data is secured for the user, but you're still saying, user, if you're interested, we can share your data with this, with the vendor, and they can still contact you with offers or with product support, et cetera.
Well, that might be the future of SaaS, to be honest with you. I mean, this, in terms of that, I mean, that's one big thing where you see in terms of either outreach or even how buying's changed these days. I mean, a lot of that, I guess, is we're all in this B2B SaaS world. I mean, that's another part that's become more anonymous, right? I mean, it used to be that you would get rung up by, you know, people would have been interested in a topic, five vendors would get called in and show and tell. And these days, it's, you know, 70% of the buying journey is done before even spoken to anybody in your organization. And I do think innovations like this where people can, and I think maybe ways it's because B2B buying used to be seen as separate to B2C buying. And I think now people are just mirroring. Like if I buy a TV, I don't walk into, but Dixon's or Curry's or wherever you, in the old days, you'd walk into one of those stores and, you know, you would talk to the guys in there. And these days, you know, you walk in and you're like, have you got an OLED 4767, whatever? And you're very specific about your requirements.
In B2B terms, here's my short list. Do you have any of these?
Yeah, exactly. It's the same thing now. I've looked into it. I know I'm looking at CDPs. I think I want components, you know, and actually to change anybody's mind is quite difficult, or, you know,
that's true. Yeah.
And actually you're changed at the margins, which is why it's very important, I think, that people, business.
Even seeing with my kids, by the way, now that you mention it, we don't go to stores anymore to browse. We go to stores to buy because we've already made up our decision.
Yeah, it's the same. It's the same, really. And sometimes,
or made up their mind, sorry.
You can see those. I mean, it's probably why I worked at Bizarre Voice many years ago. The online review stuff is important, but also peer reviews and even things like, you know, things infiltrate that, like that you can't control, because often it's a referral or people have known somebody else or they'll trust somebody else, another business, someone they work with has used a tool. So they're not really exploring the markets always in the same way they used to, or often they've come and bought a tool they're happy with, they bought it 3 years ago, and 3 years, a lot might have changed. So they start with this idea that they want X tool because someone they spoke to in the past told them about it. And now they're looking, oh, has anything else come along that's better than this? And that's the benchmark. So it can be quite hard to navigate that world. So I think, anonymous is going to be the big player for, across everything, right? Across from as more and more people. I mean, I think it's a trust issue. I think it's...
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's it. I mean, trusting people with your data, being followed around the internet, that kind of stuff. There's just a sense that... But I think underpinning it all is a sense that my information is valuable and no one's come up with a good enough... put a value on that yet for me to want to give it up.
And I think that the biggest problem that I have in that kind of situation is what if I lose trust in a brand? Where is that button I can click to say, hey, forget about me, delete my account, delete all my records that you have of me? It's not there. You can do DNRs, but you know.
You can get an email sent in and it says,
it's not DNR. That's do not resuscitate.
I remember it happening.
Please resuscitate me.
I remember happening at Telium and then having to have a real process around if people left you and that kind of things and people checking up. So you do that. But I think we just need to make it, like you say, it can be as basic as, you know, give me your email address for 25% off. And actually, I think that's another thing you can do on, we haven't really talked about the role of AI yet, right? I mean, AI...
Come on, Tommy. I was hoping to get through one podcast not talking about AI.
I do feel like AI can spot good patterns around people and behaviors that can indicate personalization strategies and also indicate which people you should target or not target through retarget through paid media channels as well. I think that's a really key part of it. So I think, and
it's going to make marketers' lives easier, absolutely. And I think even on the anonymous level, not the cookie-less level, but definitely on the anonymous level, that even there, AI can play a role. You know, what is the best channel to advertise to you on? It's going to be Facebook. Is it going to be Google Ads? Once you start looking at the context of the ads, what's going to resonate more with this anonymous user who keeps on coming back for some reason, but never wants to sign up? Yeah. So yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's going to, I think it's going to cause a whole lot of work, because you're going to get your campaign velocities are going to skyrocket. They're going to become so fast that you as a human probably wouldn't be able to keep up. But you could instruct AI to say, hey, and I think this is part of what Hightouch is doing with their AI decisioning, is to make sure you stay on top of what behavior are you seeing with these users, and jump into that opportunity immediately.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, that as put earlier about the AI piece existing within like a Snowflake with their Cortex One or the other tools that are out there. You want it across everything. But actually, so I kind of thought, well, if every tool is going to suddenly produce an AI copilot, and every tool is going to want AI in it. But ultimately, you don't want AI looking at a slice of your actions. It needs to be over the course of it. So this is going to sit in those bigger platforms, whether it's in GCP or whether it's in Snowflake or whatever. But actually, that does leave an avenue open for having AI specifically driven for acquisition. So a little plug here for us at Rea42, we actually do that today, where we will use a likeness to convert score to inform bidding strategies. And we got really good results doing that. Obviously, very basic level, people with a high propensity to convert probably don't need to be retargeted, and people with a low don't either. And it's the people in the middle you want to go after. But actually, that's been a really, really strong use case for us.
I have a demo coming up.
No, we will. I think. Well, we've got you in. We've got some new bits coming out, and then from end of March. So hopefully in April we'll be on the demo diagnosis. But actually, I mean, I think that does show the AI piece in terms of spotting patterns and movements around.
Basically, there's no way back.
That's going to make a really big player within. And do you know what? AI will probably play a big part within the analytics spaces as well, in terms of those patterns over time and training it as well. Yeah, that's my issue.
Imagine if you can combine the two then.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, extensive career in SaaS, I worked at Content Square for a few years, and actually that is an area of optimization, analytics as well. I was thinking that probably that'd be a really big area for AI to come into, where it can sort of analyze behaviors, journeys, videos in second or nanoseconds, and start driving strategies for people almost instantly.
In the session, just optimizing your path right based on your behaviors. Yeah.
Yeah. And exactly. Made that session back from informing, like, for
we're this. Getting into beer territory now, you know, right? Because this is the kind of discussions we need with beers right now. But hey, it's been great talking to you, and I really appreciate you taking the time. And like you mentioned, I am going to take you up on that offer for diagnosis demo. Please do reach out once there is something to show. And anonymous users, I think this is definitely a topic that's going to gain more foothold, especially within Europe. But yeah, time will tell. Thanks a lot again for your time, Tommy.
Right, thanks. I really enjoyed it. Thanks a lot. Yeah.
Bye.